Our newscast is supported by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. Our newscast is produced by Monica Lopez and Tina Gysi. Our headlines editor is Shannon Young, and our Washington, D.C. editor is Leanne Caldwell. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Antonio Ortiz, Puck Lowe, and Eric Klein. From KPFK in L.A., I'm Mara Abogado.
And you are listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And coming up right now is Off the Hook with Emmanuel Goldstein and the rest of his wonderful crew, coming up at 7 o'clock. And the personal computer show is immediately following at 8 o'clock. So call all your techie friends and tell them to put on WBAI 99.5 right now, because there's two great hours coming up.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
The program is Off the Hook. It's just past 7 on a Wednesday evening. I'm Mike. I'm joined in the studio by Jim.
Hello.
And by Redbird.
Good evening.
And Ken Gale is engineering for us. And we have Bernie S. in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello, there? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, now you can. I'm trying to turn on my pot.
Okay.
So I'm well in Philadelphia.
Great. And we're now going to place a phone call to somewhere in the world where we will connect with Emmanuel.
Your call is being connected. Please wait.
And wait we shall.
That's interesting. Was that a recording?
Might have been.
You never know what accent you're going to hear on this show.
No. Or what kind of ring. There's two kinds of rings with this phone number. Very strange.
Hello?
Hello, I'm looking for Emmanuel.
You found him.
Oh, how'd we do that?
You must have called the right number this time.
Ah, that's good.
How are you guys today?
We're well. How are you?
I'm good. I find myself this week in Vienna, which is in Austria, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning here, so I'm not quite as out of it as I was when you guys were calling me when I was in Asia, and it was 7 o'clock in the morning. So basically, it's a lot more normal hour for me right now. I'm here as part of the Paraflows conference, which is taking place here, hasn't taken place here for the last week or so, and will continue on into the weekend. I'll give you more information as to what that's all about. It's basically a hacker slash artist type of a gathering. It's really interesting and different. And it's really the first time I've gotten to spend in this city, which is yet another really cool European city. Can you believe it? There's just so many of them.
The city is Vienna this time?
Yes, yes.
Well, you get around.
Have you ever watched The Third Man?
You know, it's funny you should say that because some people brought that up. And they were going to take me on a tour of, I believe, there are sewers involved in that, right?
Well, not only sewers, but there's a famous Ferris wheel as well, and a zoo.
A Ferris wheel and a zoo?
Well, they're not all together. But yes, those are the three major tourist attractions that were extant in the late 40s, early 50s when Orson Welles did that movie. And yes, take the tour, by all means.
Well, we're only 2 minutes into the show, and already we've unleashed all sorts of fascinating tidbits of knowledge all about Vienna. It's a lot of fun just wandering around the city and exploring it and learning all sorts of things. Once again, I have to draw all sorts of parallels with the mass transit systems that exist in our different lands. Do you know, when you ride the trains or the buses or the trams here, it's so incredibly simple. You can get this thing known as a weekly pass. And the weekly pass really is a very good deal because it's about half the price of an eight-day pass. And you might wonder why that is. Reason being, a weekly pass begins on Monday and ends on Sunday. So if you get it on a Thursday, it's not that good a deal. But I happen to arrive here on a Monday, and I'm leaving, I think, on a Saturday, so it actually works out pretty well for me. Basically, what that does is it gives you a machine spits out a little card, and you take that little card, and you stick it in your pocket. And do you know what you do with it after that?
You keep it in your pocket.
Well, yes, but when you get onto trains or when you get onto buses or when you get onto trams, do you know what you do with the card?
You have to do something with it? Then it's not that simple.
Well, that's
absolutely
what I'm asking
nothing.
You. What do I have
that's
to do with it?
My guess
is nothing.
Yes, that's my guess as well. It's just when the undercover police think you're a fair beat that you show it to them, right?
You're absolutely correct.
Ha ha.
I can't tell you how amazing it is just to be able to hop onto a tram or a train and then get off whenever I want to and go back on whenever I want to without having to fumble for cards and put money into machines and things like that. In other words, being treated like an adult, assuming that you're getting on this thing and you actually have the credentials to prove that you belong there if you are a challenge. Hasn't happened to me yet, but it's there are no fare takers. There are no toll booths or anything like that. You just walk on and walk off.
I think most people
play it honestly. It's a good system.
There are plenty of locations in the U.S. where this is possible as well.
I believe, Bernie, didn't you have a run-in with one of those?
Well, yes, here in the Philadelphia area across the Delaware River is the New Jersey Transit's river, I think it's called the River Rail. It's a river something or other. It's a light rail system that goes from Camden up to Trenton. And not having ever been on a system in the States like you described, I purchased my ticket from the machine, like I do on other New Jersey Transit machines, and got on the train. But apparently that's a fare-based system whereby you have to endorse or punch the ticket before you board the train. But it's not obvious. There's no signs that are conspicuous to say you have to do that. And at the end of the thing, to make a long story short, by the time I got to Trenton, a uniformed officer, fare enforcement officer, approached me and asked for my ticket. I handed it to him proudly. And then he wrote me up for a $75 fine, which I fought but ultimately lost. They didn't have a lawyer.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you do have to cancel tickets here as well, but not the weekly pass, not the one that I got, because, as I mentioned, that's only good from a set date to another set date, so there's no reason to do that. It already is pre-canceled when they give it to you. But other ones, yeah, it's true. It's not quite so obvious what you have to do in order to be legal. But there are these little blue machines everywhere that you're supposed to stick your ticket in. And, of course, we have several different systems here. We've got all sorts of trams running all over the city. For those of you who don't know, what do you call trams in the United States? Streetcars, trolleys?
Trolleys,
okay. We don't have very many of them, but they're all over the place here. We have what's known as the S-Bahn, which is the same thing as in Germany. It's kind of a regional rail system. And then you have what's known as the U-Bahn, symbolized by a big blue U over what is the equivalent of a subway station. And there are five lines numbered, the U1, the U2, the U3, the U4, and the U6.
I see a theoretical flaw there.
What's wrong with that?
There are five lines, and none of them is numbered U5.
You know, why did I know that you'd bring that up, Jim? It's something that...
I figured that by you actually enumerating them, you were hinting.
Well, no, actually, I was listing, but okay, you've picked up on an obvious flaw in the system. It's something that they don't like to talk about here, and if you want me to, I guess I can ask a whole lot of embarrassing questions, and next week I'll tell you what I find out, but I don't really see the point of...
Frankly, the thought of you asking embarrassing questions is worth much more than me finding out about the U5 line. So go right ahead.
We'll get to the bottom of what happened to the U5 line in Vienna. I guess I'll make that top priority. In addition, they also have what I see in very many cities, and that's something we're starting to see in New York, and that's the timer on top of the subway platform on the sign that tells you how long it's going to be before the train actually shows up. We're seeing them in New York City, too, on bus stops, believe it or not, and, of course, they're on all the bus stops and tram stops here. It's a major difference, and Mike, I think I know you know what the major difference between the two systems is.
Well, I'm going to guess, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. I'm going to guess that the major difference is that in Vienna, like in so many other cities, they actually work, whereas in New York they don't.
You are spot on. That is exactly the difference. When I was on the L train, actually on my way to the airport, I happened to have an opportunity to get to know one of these signs and to watch how it operated. And it basically was counting down. It said the next L train will be here. I got it all the way down to 2 minutes, and then it jumped up to 5 minutes. And then you could hear the train approaching. And then this is coupled with audio announcements. So the woman on the speaker, who I could really understand for once, was announcing trains pulling into stations that were not actually pulling into stations because she was basing it on the sign, and the sign was wrong. I'll say this, when the train actually was passing me by on the platform, the sign did acknowledge that and say the train is arriving in 0 minutes. But I honestly cannot for the life of me figure out why in New York City it is so difficult for the system that they've spent so much time and money putting together, for that system not to be able to sense when a train is passing a signal and how long it's going to take for the train afterwards to reach the station, especially when the train is practically in the station already. You just look down yourself and you can say, hey, the train will be here in 1 minute. I don't know why the sign can't do that.
But not only that, the last time I was on the L line, the directions weren't even indicated correctly. In other words, toward Brooklyn or toward 8th Avenue, they were totally wrong. I mean, it's just very strange. The whole thing just doesn't work.
I don't understand it. There are so many things that should be easy that aren't, and the rest of the world seems to get it. They really do. I saw this in Singapore. I saw this in Malaysia. The system works, and it's really not that hard to put it together to make it work. It's like we enjoy difficulties. I'm not quite sure I understand why. If anyone out there, any of our listeners, has an answer as to why it's so difficult for us to make things work, we'd like to know. OTH@2600.com. Bernie, yes.
I just wanted to point out that the new subway system in Bangkok, which is only about 3 years old, also has a working and accurate timer system whereby on the platform you can tell when that train's going to get there, and it's pretty accurate.
You can also see working things in this country, in Washington, D.C., which is not in many respects a particularly well-run city. This thing, this countdown timer works. I really don't know why we can't have it in New York.
Or Philadelphia.
And, of course, it's only on one subway line in New York right now. It took years to get it on that line, so I don't know what the future is as far as that goes.
I'm not quite willing to say. You know, I don't think the world would be a much better place if we had broken systems on more subway lines, so I'm willing to wait till they learn how to make it work.
Well, why don't they just bring the people that did it here over there and make them do it?
I don't know.
That would seem to solve all the problems.
Emmanuel, it's probably for the same reason that we didn't bring the Dutch over to New Orleans to build new levees, because they know how to build them in the Netherlands.
You're basically pushing the learn how to fish attitude, where basically they could give us a fish or they can let us learn how to fish ourselves, except that we're never actually going to do it because no one's really teaching us.
Well, what they're doing in New Orleans is they're allowing the fish to just come to the people. It's much more advanced.
All right. I think we've had enough of these analogies. Next week I'm going to be in Rome, which is in Italy, Jim.
I knew that. There's also one in New York, but go on.
Okay. So I figured you'd make a wise exit remark
nuclear
like that.
There's nuclear weapons in the one in New York.
Yeah, but there are no nuclear weapons in the one in Rome, and that's the one I'm heading to. We know of. The one in Italy, I'm in. But on the way to Italy, I'm going to the world's oldest republic. And who would like to guess what that might be?
No one here seems to know, so I guess I'll jump in. It would be San Marino.
That's right. Jeopardy Jim gets it yet again. San Marino, one of the world's smallest countries, which is right smack in the middle of Italy. I figured out how to get there. It involves trains and buses. And I'll be visiting there this weekend on my way to Rome. So that's going to be an interesting stop. And it's the third tiny country I've been to. There's Monaco, there's Andorra, and now it'll be San Marino. I have not yet made it to Liechtenstein. I understand, Redbird, you did.
A long time ago. Yes.
It's like 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago, yeah. It's a long
time. A long time ago.
In my years, it's a long time.
The Reagan years, that was a long time ago.
It's 10% of his life. Give him a break.
It's true. It still feels like yesterday. So that's basically my itinerary for the next week or so.
Well, there's nothing really exciting in Liechtenstein.
You say there's nothing exciting in Liechtenstein?
There wasn't really. There's banks and stuff.
Banks, okay.
That's why he's going to San Marino.
I don't know exactly what's in San Marino. I'll find out when I get there. I know it's kind of mountainous, so should be interesting. Very picturesque, that kind of thing. So enough of my travel plans. But again, if anybody is in Rome that listens to the program, feel free to email us at oth@2600.com. Maybe we can meet up or something. There is a hacker get-together in Pisa, which I'll be reporting on as well. And we'll have more about the Paraflows conference, which is taking place here in Vienna in just a moment. But first, let's take a quick look at what's been going on in the world of technology, computers, that kind of thing. Now, I understand that there have been some developments in a couple of things. First of all, something involving the NSA and wiretaps, and we're supposed to believe what they're telling us now. What's the latest on this, Mike?
Well, there's an article in today's New York Times that says, "Warrantless wiretaps not used, official says." And the official is Mike McConnell, the director of National Intelligence, and he was testifying before the House Judiciary Committee. And he is saying that the government has conducted electronic surveillance only after seeking court-approved warrants. But then you can skip down a few paragraphs and learn that that only applies to phones in the United States. They're still wiretapping the rest of the world without court approval, and they're not providing any reasons for us to believe them, even in the United States. One of the interesting things that was in this article is that Mike McConnell is pushing for a provision that would grant legal immunity to the telecommunications companies that have secretly cooperated with the NSA on the warrantless program. Those companies, now facing lawsuits, have never been officially identified, although there's only two telecommunication companies basically left in the United States, so it's not that hard to guess who they might be.
But wait one moment. If there are no warrantless wiretaps, how can you possibly give immunity for something that was not done?
Well, he's saying it was done. It's no longer being done.
Oh, okay.
We seem to have lost...
That's not me. I'm still here.
All right.
We've lost Bernie in Philadelphia.
What a surprise.
But you still have Emmanuel in Vienna.
Yeah, we can call Vienna with a lot less problems than Philadelphia.
Well, don't put the whammy on it, because last time we had a lot of trouble reaching me in Kuala Lumpur.
That's true.
And I had to use my cell phone. So basically what they're saying is that they did it before, but they're not doing it now. Does anybody know when now started?
Yes, it says that, it does say, since last February, at least February.
Uh-huh.
So they've been going, a whole 7 months.
Well, I think by this point the American public is so confused as to who's spying on whom and what's legal and what's not legal and when a warrant is needed and when it is not. I don't think anybody is going to believe that they're not being listened to a whole lot more than they used to be. And I also think a lot of people don't have that much of a problem with it. Just like a lot of people want surveillance cameras, I think privacy is something that we are increasingly thinking of as a privilege, not a right. And that's very sad and scary.
I don't even think we're thinking of it as a privilege. We're thinking of it as sort of non-existent. I mean, there's no one claiming that, or very few people claiming that innocent people aren't being wiretapped and spied upon by cameras and all this stuff. It seems pretty clear that it's gone, privacy.
Well, it's a rather somber note to end that piece on, but something we'll keep an eye on, and we'll keep watching the NSA, hopefully more than they watch us. Bernie, you have some good news from Philadelphia.
He doesn't have any news. We lost him.
Oh, that's right. Look at that. I had my cue all ready to go, and I have no Bernie to give it to. Okay, are we trying to get Bernie back?
We can try if you have some other news in the meantime.
Yes, I can fill the space. Were you reaching him on a landline or on a cell phone, by the way?
A Sprint PCS mobile telephone.
Okay, yeah, those are always problems. Well, keep trying. I'll move over to Jim. Jim, I believe you had information on a really cool conference or event that took place in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I came across this in the New York Times the other day, and it struck me by the similarities to what we all know and love, the Hope Conferences, but it seems to have been much more avant-garde. A group of artists, followers of someone named Guy Debord, a French writer, filmmaker, and co-founder of the Situationist movement, which I never heard of in my life, had a sort of... You've heard of it?
You never heard of the Situationist? I thought you were supposed to know everything.
I know a lot, but I don't know everything.
Well,
that's the question you got to ask him next time he's on the show. Next time he's on Jeopardy, ask him about the Situationist.
You can't be on Jeopardy more than once in your lifetime, okay? But anyway.
Well, you can use a different name, can't you? You put a paper bag over your head or
they
something.
They had a guy who did that a few years back, and when they found out who he was, he didn't end up winning the $50,000 that he supposedly won. Anyway, this was in Williamsburg, which, of course, is the hotbed of avant-garde in New York City and in Brooklyn. And they had a lot of things that would have looked familiar to many Hope attendees. They had a locksmithing institute. They had a gorilla cell tower. They had...
That's where apes can place phone calls?
No, G-U-E.
I don't think we had one of those, did we?
No, I don't believe we did.
But was it functioning? Was it hooked up?
They alleged it was functioning, the Times.
Interesting.
They had surveillance cameras. They had discussions about surveillance cameras. They had rechargers for all sorts of electronic devices. They had a celebrity, the artist Hassan, let me see if I can pronounce this, Elahi, who I believe is from Rutgers. We've mentioned him about, I'd say, 9 months ago. He has a website where he literally has his GPS coordinates and occasional photographs. Every time he moves, he takes another photograph, and his GPS is live and constantly updated because he was approached by, I don't remember if it was the FBI or some other agency after 9/11, and forced to essentially retrace his steps entirely to, quote, prove, unquote, his innocence. And so now he's made that into an interactive art installation on the web.
It's quite a sacrifice for
yeah, I know,
an
I
art
know.
Installation.
It is bothersome in its idea and in its execution. But apparently this was well attended, and it made quite an impact on the Times.
And this was called Conflux. It took place last weekend.
It was called Conflux. Yeah, it took place apparently a weekend ago. About
and
10 days.
I wish we had known about it beforehand. We would have definitely promoted it.
There's a lot of mentions in here of the persons and organizations involved, notably the Interactive Telecommunications Program at NYU. So I was thinking we should probably contact these people.
Most definitely to get involved in Hope next July. And there'll be more information on that, of course, at www.hope.net.
Mike.
So thanks, Jim, for that information. Now, I understand, Bernie, you have some good news down there in Philadelphia.
Yes, for a change, there's actually some good news in Philadelphia.
Thank God he's back.
I am back. Sprint PCS just summarily dropped me. Sorry about that. But in any case, the good news in Philadelphia is that this may seem bizarre to most of our listeners who might be in metropolitan areas where public access cable TV channels exist. Yeah, that is, those channels where the public can create their own programming or documentaries or art pieces or interview shows or whatever and get them on the cable system. Philadelphia is the largest of
dozens of cities in the United States that has no public access channels at all, even though it was a city ordinance in the early 80s that was enacted to require this to happen. But for a variety of political reasons, Comcast and the city council here in Philadelphia never made it happen. And a group I've been involved with, the Philadelphia Community Access Coalition, for many years has been filing lawsuits and making phone calls and protesting at Comcast shareholder meetings and talking to city council members and so forth. And finally, we must have struck a nerve somewhere, because the mayor yesterday at a press conference announced that five public access TV channels on the cable system will be permitted and will be rolling out very soon here in Philadelphia.
Now, Bernie, I'm a little confused here. You say that there has been no public access on Philadelphia cable for low these many years. Is that correct?
Zero. None whatsoever.
And have you not been paying fees for these public access channels?
Absolutely. Every subscriber to cable television in Philadelphia, a portion of their bill was going to fund this. As the city ordinance said, about $500,000 a year would be coming out of the franchise fees, which come out of your bill. And for the past 20-some years, the city has just been spending that on other things. You could say they've been misappropriating these $10 million or so, but that would be maybe too incendiary to make that claim. But in any case, the money has been spent and not on public access, nor have the five channels that were supposed to be allocated, have they been used for public access for the past 20-some years, but they were, in fact, used by Comcast for corporate profit ventures, such as pay-per-view channels, that sort of thing. So I'm hoping this will come to an end soon now with this announcement, and it was in front of a whole lot of people, and it was all the newspapers today here in Philadelphia. So it looks like it's going to happen. The city has donated the use of a retired library in North Philadelphia, the Widener Free Library, and that will become the studios for the new public access system. But these days people can create video programming without a studio, obviously, with a camcorder and a computer. So we're looking forward to getting a lot of interesting programming, much of which has been pent up for many years, and we've had no outlet here in Philadelphia on the cable system. So probably by the beginning of next year, the first of these channels will be in place, and people will be watching some very interesting programming. You're very lucky there in New York. The Manhattan Neighborhood Network is a model public access system, and I toured that place a few years ago. It's an incredible system, and they have some great programming, and Philadelphians will be able to enjoy something similar in the near future. So this is great news, and it just shows that if you're persistent, it's just a small group of people, if you're persistent and push hard enough, you can affect change in government, but you have to be incredibly persistent.
Well, now, how many of you were there?
Well, the board consists of a small handful of people whom you could count on the fingers of one hand, one of whom, I'm one of those people, but it's a coalition of other organizations that have an interest in putting their own public access programming on the cable system. And there's probably about 30 different groups who've expressed an interest in that. And from time to time, we would get them together to explain to them what was going on with the negotiations and the lawsuits. And occasionally, we'd get them to express their concerns to city council people, the mayor's office, to Comcast, that sort of thing. So it's a loose-knit group of a bunch of people. A smaller number of people were actually doing the behind-the-scenes work in negotiating with the city and Comcast and so forth. But bottom line is, it doesn't take a whole lot of people to affect change, but it takes a whole lot of time and perseverance. And I'm proud to say that it finally has happened in Philadelphia. And anybody who's listening who's in a small city that doesn't have public access, it's worth doing, because it's a remarkable resource. You may say, what's the point now with the Internet and the video channels like YouTube and so forth? Still, more people get their information, sadly, more people get the information from television than from any other source. It's still the case. So if that's the case, it's worth getting information that needs to be told out on TV.
Well, It's interesting you should say all that, because I showed Freedom Downtime yesterday to a group of people here in Vienna, and it was basically the same message, that a small group of people who basically keep trying are able to really affect change. We saw that in your case. We saw that in Kevin's case. We saw that with the movie that they were making about Kevin. So what you say about actually getting the policy to change there in Philadelphia for the public access, that there's a lot of truth to that. I think it's a good thing, though, that there are people out there who tune in on television, who tune into the radio, in addition to the Internet. The problem with the Internet is there is just so much out there that it's almost impossible to actually find something good unless somebody else tells you about it, whereas on the radio and on television, well, there's a lot of crap there, too. But at least it's a more traditional sense, a more traditional way of getting the message out. And it's also a way of reaching those people that don't have the high technology at their fingertips. Everybody has a radio, and most people have TV sets, too. So the odds of them just happening upon something that you are doing are much, much greater if you have access to that technology. And that's something we should never give up. There are people who will say that, okay, they won't let us have access to the airwaves, but we can do what we want to do on YouTube. It's not the same thing, and you should never give up that fight. You should always try and get access to as much technology, to as much broadcasting as you possibly can.
There was one bone of contention in these negotiations over the past couple of years with Comcast, and that is when the franchise agreement was signed many, many years ago, back in the 80s, they agreed to provide 5 analog channels. And now that the system is largely digital, all they wanted to offer us were digital channels. Well, unfortunately, the two lowest priced tiers of programming, that is basic cable and standard basic cable, which lower-income residents of Philadelphia primarily subscribe to because the digital cable costs more money, they would have been shut out from public access. So we refused to agree to that, and we kept fighting another year or so, so they would offer us some analog bandwidth. So that's going to be happening. There'll be at least one analog channel to start with, so that everybody in Philadelphia who has cable television will be able to view it instead of those who pay an extra fee for digital. But that's the kind of thing you see where companies try to say digital is so much better. Well, it's better for them because they only have to allocate about 1/10 as much bandwidth using the compression algorithms they're using on their system. But we stood fast to allow everybody in Philadelphia who has cable television to be able to view some public access programming. So we held out for some analog bandwidth, and we finally got it. So companies are sneaky. They're going to try to say, oh, this is better, so you should go with that. But it's not true.
Bernie.
All right, well, congratulations, Bernie, on affecting change and hopefully getting some interesting programming to the people of Philadelphia.
And you're listening to Off the Hook on WBAI New York.
And now we're going to move on to talk with somebody out here in Vienna who is one of the organizers of the Paraflows Conference. It's part of the whole Monochrome Collective they have out here. They appeared at Hope number 6 last year in New York. You may have seen their panel. You can go to hope.net and download their panel if you haven't. And they have a space. They have a space right smack in the middle of Vienna, right near City Hall and Parliament, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. They have this huge space. They call it the Meta Labs, M-E-T-A-L-A-B-S. And this is where hackers from all over the city come and hang out and play and write programs and improve the space. Now, I'm here with Johannes, who is one of the coordinators, and one of the shocking bits of information that I found out since getting here and seeing how this whole conference is being put together, having gone through this so many times, those of you in the studio, myself, we know what it takes to put together a conference. We know it's an incredible expense and all sorts of hassles and bureaucracy take place. And over here, the way it works is the city of Vienna, gives grants out to artists, to people who are putting together programs like this, grants for conferences, grants for spaces, grants for all sorts of projects, both inside and outside the country. And we're looking at a total of about 500,000 euros that has been given to this group of people just to put things like this together. And it's simply mind-boggling to me. I'm trying to think of a clean way to say this, that something like this could happen where it's just made so easy. Well, I don't want to say that it's an easy job, but that's a major hassle being taken out of the whole formula when you don't have to worry about charging people money, you don't have to worry about raising it in the first place, when the government is there and they're actually encouraging you to be creative. This goes well beyond the free health care they have here. This is something entirely different. I'm going to put Johannes on for a moment just to introduce himself and discuss some of the things that these guys have been up to. Johannes?
Hi, hello. I hope I'm not collapsing because I haven't slept a lot in the last couple of days, but it's really great being on the air on the other side of the world. Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the air.
Yeah, hello, to the airwaves. Okay, so Emmanuel already did a brief introduction. I think it's even better than he already mentioned. I tell the short story about how old this happened. Of course, there is a long tradition in Austria and in Europe at all about art funding. So, I mean, when we're talking about hack spaces and stuff like that, you wouldn't, like, immediately think about art funding or something like that, yeah? You would think about, like, technology sponsoring or whatever, okay? Something really interesting happened, like, 2 or 3 years ago. The city government, like the arts department of the city government of Vienna, basically found out that there are so many different net cultures, like gaming culture and hackers and people who are doing media art or net art. So there are many, many, many different approaches to creatively using the net or digital media. And they said, we want to fund this new, completely new field of net art and net cultures in a new way, because like if an officer is sitting in an office somewhere working for the art department, the officer never would be able to grasp the whole idea of it because he's just an officer sitting in an office somewhere and has nothing to do with art or with hacking culture or whatever. So they basically asked us, the community of net culture activists in Vienna, net culture artists, how should we fund you? So what should be the right way to give you some money to support your projects? And we said the best thing is that we ourselves should decide how the money should be spent. And that was the really big, big deal, and I think it never happened anywhere before on the whole planet. They said, yes. they said, okay, start discussing within your scene how the money should be distributed, and so you have you have not all the time in the world, but you have like a year or two to discuss how this funding system should work. And we had a lot of discussions. You can imagine. I mean, if like 100 or 200 people are discussing how the money should be given to themselves, you can like really imagine that there was a lot of hassle and flame wars and whatever, but somehow it still runs and it still works, and we're like basically distributing 500,000 euros per month to the whole net culture scene. I'm so tired. We're not in heaven here. It's per year. It's per year, of course. Okay. And there was a lot of discussion because, first of all, we thought maybe we could do it with a reputation system. So people who do great projects should get more money than people who don't do great projects. But then we thought that's a not really like social way to approach it, because if you have like newcomers who nobody knows but have great ideas, then they would have like a bad standing there if we just do it with a reputation system. So then we thought, how could we do it then? And there was a lot of discussing about voting systems and voting models and blah, 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 blah. Really then after like 1.5 hours of discussing, we found a way, like a self-remodeling system. So if something is going wrong, then we could like adjust it ourselves. And now we have a couple of different grants, we call it. First of all, there are the infrastructure grants, and that's where, for example, the Hackspace Meta Lab comes into place, because the Hackspace got money from this infrastructure grant, because we thought one part of the money should be dedicated to projects in Vienna that are supporting the scene itself. For example, there is a great project called Funkfeuer, and they are trying to set up a free wireless network all over the town. So, for example, the scene then said, that's a really cool project for all of us. The infrastructure grant for, like, I don't know, like 15,000 euros should go to Funkfeuer. Another great idea was to set up a hackspace in Vienna where many, many people could meet and share and use the space and do conferences and projects and blah, blah, blah. So many people voted for giving money to this project called Meta Lab. And many people voted for the project, and the Meta Lab got the money, and they now have a really great place. It's like 150 square meters right like next to the center of Vienna. And it's running now for a year, and this hackspace wouldn't have been possible without this collaborative funding model. And why am I talking to you here? Because Emmanuel Goldstein is here, and Emmanuel Goldstein is here because there is an annual convention, we call it. And this annual convention this year is called Paraflows. And that's another part of this funding system, because we thought it's an interesting idea to present all the projects that get money from the system. And there are so many interesting projects all around the world and so many interesting people like Emmanuel. We should have like an annual convention that consists of an exhibition and social events and parties and talks and workshops. And that's basically the second major column of this funding model. So the infrastructure grants and this annual convention. And the third part is called network grants. And that's basically project funding. So somebody has the idea of doing a great computer game or has the idea of starting whatever create.
Hello, Johannes, are you still there? We appear to have lost Johannes. We'll try and get them back.
We'll exercise our technical expertise and dial Vienna, Austria once again.
We'll see if we can do that. Do you have a news story in the meanwhile?
I think Bernie's still with us, right, Bernie?
I am still here, and I just wanted to mention to anybody who was interested in the public access television system in Philadelphia, they can go to phillyaccess.org. That's phillyaccess.org for more information. There's also a link to a lot of the news stories about how this is going to take place. So check it out.
Just a few words. The juggernaut that is Microsoft is being opposed by IBM. They're throwing themselves in front of Microsoft's wheels. They're offering Office software free in challenge to Microsoft Office and all those. So you may want to look into IBM's website for that. If you're running a company and you don't want to pay Microsoft for its stuff, you can get similar stuff free from IBM. Personal Computer Show may have more on that, but have we got it to Manuel back yet?
No, we're still working. It's a very high-tech system. Mm. I got this very strange email from a company I do business with. It says confidential in large type or bold type. Protecting our clients' account information is a top priority, and we value the trust you place in the company. Regrettably, criminals are increasingly using the internet for illegitimate purposes, as is the case with many companies that maintain databases of information. The company is from time to time subject to attempts to illegally extract information from its databases. And can you guess what the next several paragraphs are about?
Ooh.
We exposed your information.
How did you ever guess?
What's interesting to me about this letter that you got is how they try to intimidate you into not telling anyone about it by labeling it confidential, and then having this whole paragraph at the bottom about how the information in this letter is confidential and, you know, do not disclose it to anyone else.
Well, it clearly worked. We don't know what company this is.
You want me to tell you? I just don't want to give them any advertising.
I don't think it's positive advertising at this point.
It would probably not be
positive. The company is called Layered Technologies.
Layers of what?
I don't... Layers of what? I don't know. And they post this allegedly confidential memo, confidentiality notice and all, on their blog. So I don't know how secret they plan to keep it. It's very strange. We appear to have Emmanuel back with us.
Yeah, you guys have real trouble keeping a phone connection over there, don't you?
You know, these phones, it's a new technology. I don't think it's going to work out.
All right, listen, I'm going to hand you back to Johannes, and you tell him how much you didn't hear of what he was saying, because he was saying a lot of good things. I'm going to hand it to him right now.
Okay, the transatlantic communication, it's shattered. So, hello?
Hello.
Yes, we're here.
Okay, hi, when was I disconnected?
You start to mention that you were getting other things like Emmanuel over there.
Okay,
you were on the third of the types of grants.
The third of this, like the whole funding system consists of a couple of grants. Yes, and the third, then basically, I'm not like, I don't want to go into detail here. It's basically like the infrastructure grants for infrastructure projects and for projects for the whole scene. The network grants basically deal with project funding. So if somebody wants to make a great like NetArt project or program a computer game or something like that, then it's basically people basically present a list of possible projects they could do, and then the people could vote for those projects. And we had a lot of discussion about like. That it's not it shouldn't be something like a hit list like in the radio, like there's the number one single and the second single and blah 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 blah. So we tried to we discussed a lot how we could basically make this like socially acceptable, so not only like there are not only winners and losers, but how we could somehow make it like socially working, because of course I already mentioned it's not an easy task for so many people who actually want money to do good projects that they are not completely pissed. Sorry, I nearly said a four-letter word. But
you can say that word.
I can say that word.
Don't say it anyway.
Okay. I don't say it. But you can imagine. I mean, and still, it's really interesting because there's a lot of still a lot of trouble and discussing and blah blah blah. For example, there are people, for example, who don't think that this system is a good system because we are doing the job for the government here, and the government is paid for distributing the money, and then they should do it, and not we in our free time should distribute the money. And there are people who actually say, nah, you're spies for the government because you're data mining on the scene and blah, 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 blah. You can imagine there's a lot of discussing and flame warring and whatever. But still, I think that Emmanuel is here over here in Vienna is a good proof that we actually did a good job in like trying to make something cool with the money. Okay.
I'm curious if you could talk briefly about some of the projects that you're able to fund with this.
Yeah, for example, this like whole Paraflows event is being funded. I mean, if you like, I could actually talk a little bit about what's happening here. For example, today, Jason Brown from Los Angeles did a great talk with, like, I think nearly 500 PowerPoint slides or keynote slides about paranoia, like 3,500 years of paranoia condensed into 1 hour, and why basically the whole world is being explained by the movie Tron. And that's a really, really interesting talk it was, and it was cool to have him over here. For example, there are many cool projects being presented, and some of them were funded by this system. In one of the old anti-aircraft powers here in Vienna. You know, of course, like Second World War and blah, 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 and Nazis. There are six giant anti-aircraft towers in Vienna. And we can use one of those anti-aircraft towers that are basically impossible to blow up. You would have to blow up the whole city to blow up one of those anti-aircraft bunkers. And we can use one of those bunkers to do the official art exhibition for Paraflows. And there are a couple of really, really exciting projects from various fields. I think maybe I should like not focus too much on the Paraflows exhibition. I'm just thinking what other interesting projects were funded. I already mentioned this try to set up a free wireless network all over Vienna called Funkfeuer. That's a really cool project. There is even a project that is dealing with creating music with like Nintendo Entertainment Systems and stuff like that. So how you could hack gaming machines, and how to reuse, how to find new ways to creatively use like consumer electronic devices and stuff like that. So there's one really interesting art project who is trying to remodel consumer electronics, and that's interesting because he couldn't. It wouldn't have been possible to do the project because he couldn't afford to buy all those consumer electronic stuff to then like dissect it and rebuild it. But I think I thought Emmanuel wanted to ask something, but okay, yeah.
Now I remember. A lot of you folks came to the Chaos Communications camp, and one of the most popular projects was the reconstruction of a phone booth or something?
Yes, it's an old phone booth. It's part of the Meta Lab now, and this old phone booth, it's from the like 1980s or 1990s, and the Meta Lab guys set up as a landmark for the Austrian like village at the Chaos Communication camp. The MetaLab guys set up this phone booth, and it actually was really working. And there was another project that actually didn't get any funding from this funding system, but it's still a cool thing that happened because the MetaLab was funded, is a potato gun, like a taser-based potato gun, and it was actually able to shoot potatoes for a really, really, wide distance. For example, at the Chaos Communication Camp, we had this procession, I would call it. You all know the thing about the SCO Linux Unix distribution. And we thought of, because it was very interesting at that time that there was this legal thing happening, and we said we want to somehow, even in a physical way, destroy the SCO Unix CD. So we had this procession through the whole Chaos Communication camp, and I was shouting like a priest. And then we executed the SCO disk by shooting with a potato gun on it. And we had a mob of 200 hackers screaming like they were out of their minds because we did it, and it was a really great social hacking of shooting potatoes. Yes. Hello.
Yes, we're still
here.
We're just in awe of this thing. I actually saw this procession, and it's really.
You should start a procession like that somewhere in Brooklyn and build potato guns.
I think if we did that in New York, the police would shoot at us before we could shoot the potato. But it's a good idea anyhow.
And actually, I think the whole performance was called hexorcism, to hexorcise. We hexorcised SCO Unix. Yeah. There are a lot of interesting things happening. And tomorrow, for example. That's one of the things that's part of the Paraflows conference here is there is an orchestra in Vienna. And this orchestra is not like a normal orchestra. They don't use normal, regular instruments. They are the vegetable orchestra. So they built, before they start to perform, they built musical devices out of cucumbers or carrots or pumpkins or whatever. And then they go on stage, and then they perform excellent music played on the cucumber or pumpkin flute or whatever. And afterwards, after the concert, they make a big bowl of soup out of the instruments, and together with the audience, they eat the soup. And tomorrow, and that's something like relating to net culture or to digital culture, tomorrow for the first time, they will build a synthesizer somehow built out of vegetables. I don't know how it will work, but it's some kind of a strange, bizarre machinery, like a cyborg between the vegetables and hardware. I don't know. I never saw it before. I'll see tomorrow.
Johannes, this is really interesting. Is there a website where our listeners could possibly see some of this stuff?
Yeah. So first of all, there is the Paraflows homepage. It's Paraflows, Paraflows. .at for Austria, and you have a lot of links on that page to the different talks, for example, Emmanuel's talks, or a link to the vegetable orchestra. I mean, if you just use, like, the only superpower in the world is Google, so take Google and enter vegetable orchestra, then you'll go to the, you'll find the official homepage of the vegetable orchestra. There are a couple of short examples how their sound how it sounds.
We're running, Johannes, out of time. We're going to play for you, for our audience, a bit of the orchestra. I don't know if you can give the phone back to Emmanuel.
Yes, I'll give it back to Emmanuel. And thanks. I already knew how the vegetable orchestra sounds, but I hope that the audience over in the States will like it.
And I just want to suggest that we start work right now on figuring out how to get New York to become part of Austria. Because I think that's the only way that we're ever going to achieve this kind of productivity. But it's been really, really inspirational over here in Vienna, seeing what these guys are doing, seeing how the support exists. I just hope one day we can figure out how to do it ourselves.
All right. Well, I hope so, too. And now we're going to hear the Vienna Vegetable Orchestra.
And this has been Off the Hook on WBAI New York.
Ha 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 ha.